Hello and welcome to the March 2016 Professional Organisers Edge teleclass, which is Organising Small Spaces. I'm Angela Anoff, the owner and creator of Professional Organisers Edge, and welcome. I am excited to share with you this little snippet. One of the reasons I'm excited is that usually we talk about marketing, we talk about, securing clients and what should you charge and all those sort of business-related things. And only occasionally do we get back down to the basics of how to work with people and get them organised. And this is one of those times. So that's one reason I'm excited. I have asked people to stay muted for this call. We had an issue with the recording sound quality of the last teleclass. So for this one, as an experiment, I've asked people to mute themselves. That's why you won't hear murmurings, questions and so on during the call until the very end, which is when we're going to open up for Q&A and I can hang around and answer questions as long as we need to. As usual, I'll be mentioning code words so that you can collect your certificates for accreditation, for the APO accreditation, and I will tell you what to do with those code words at the end. Now, has anybody else joined us? No? Alrighty. Now, about our topic. How to organise small spaces. Now, this is something that I'm coming up against a lot more with the kind of people that I work with, and in all different ways. One thing is that with property prices increasing, you know, square footage is becoming quite expensive, and people need financially to downsize. So I've helped people downsize from, you know, massive big homes to smaller homes and even smaller. Of course, we have an ageing population which tends to move to downsizing, and that could be, as I did with my husband when we became empty nesters, that could be by choice or it could be by necessity. And of course, then the next step may be from a small apartment into a nursing home accommodation, which is when you really have to pare things down as well. Or often people are choosing to live with less. You know, the old minimalist movement, the tiny house trend, is becoming more popular. People are choosing to live with less in smaller spaces, and that frees them up to do other things with their money. And, of course, there's the student accommodation. So people might just be needing to live in very small spaces for a temporary thing, you know, as students or as young adults in share accommodation. So for all of those reasons, it is useful for us to know how to organise small spaces. And, of course, these things that we talk about don't only apply to small spaces. We also want to be doing the best we can with the space available in large homes. So, of course, we will be using these skills all over. So let's get on with the show. I've got five steps to share, five different steps, and some do's and don'ts before we get to the end. And I will be interested to hear of any techniques, any ideas you've had that you want to share with me at the end as well. So step number one, and this is with any organising project, is to declutter. It's absolutely no use organising something unless, you know, you absolutely need it. Why organise when you can discard, some people say. So you don't have to be a minimalist when you're living in a small space. It sure does help, though. But there are lots of occasions when you can live full abundant lives with full abundant homes, but they're just a lot smaller. Living in a small space is a chance to live well with your best stuff. And that's something we can remind our clients of when they're making choices about what to declutter or what to hang on to and so on. You know, use the good china, drink from the good glasses, use the good sheets and the good blanket, the good towels and so on. Why deprive yourself? Now, it may help when you're working with someone trying to work out what they're going to declutter. It may help to know, is this something they want to do? Is it a choice of theirs to be living in a smaller space? Or is this something they have no choice in? That will go to their mindset. Is this a positive experience for them or a negative one? It's more likely, if it's a negative situation for them, more likely that they will want to hang on to things. You know, maybe even, especially if it's a temporary situation, they may want to hang on just in case, you know, 12 months down the track they get to use those things again. Of course, you're going to use your best judgment and ask the right questions to help people to get through this process. And you're going to examine their individual and immediate needs. Questions like, who are you in this space, will help them look at their identity. Who am I in this place? Well, I am different to the person I used to be when I had young children and we needed all the extras that go along with that. I am now, you know, a different person, a retired person, or a, you know, someone with different values even. So if you can help tease out those values, tease out the identity that somebody has about themselves, then you may be able to get through that decluttering process a lot more easily. You could ask, does the space reflect who you are? And of course, this helps when you may not be helping them transition into that small space, but you might have been called in when they're living in that small space and feeling overwhelmed. So ask, what does the space reflect who you are? And of course, if you've been called in, the likely answer is no, and I'm not happy about it. So then you want to ask things like, well, what do you want the space to look and feel like? What do you want the space to say about you? And then you can help create a clear vision for how they want to use the space, how they want it to feel, what identity it's going to have. For instance, typically in a small space, a room needs to have more than one identity. My second bedroom in my two-bedroom apartment has a few functions. It has, you know, it's my home office, as well as my guest room, as well as my craft storage area. So, you know, you're going to have to examine what kinds of things the space needs to do and how it needs to feel and support the person's identity and vision for themselves. And then it's interesting to me that, of course, there are so many different people in the world and everyone's got a different personality, and we all are different. We feel differently about how much we're comfortable with living, and I mean stuff in this instance. And I think about an arty friend of mine who lives in a very small space and loves doing that. She's got, you know, husband and two kids, and they all enjoy living in a small space, which to me and my sensitivity is quite cluttered. But to them it feels warm, they feel cocooned, they feel joyful looking at the objects of art and knickknacks and things that are in their home. So their level of comfort with the amount of stuff is quite different to my level of comfort. And, of course, you've got to keep that under consideration as well. So while you're decluttering with your client, which is step one, it might be useful to remember these words, which Francine Jay, who calls herself Miss Minimalist, says, your home is living space, not storage space. So I think it is useful. You know, it can be tempting for some people who want to hang on to everything to just try and cram in as much as they possibly can store in their house and forget that a home is for living. A home is for being able to do what you want. You know, if you need space to practice yoga, make sure there's room for yoga. So that might mean empty space, you know, nothing around. It might mean other things, which I can talk about later as well, some ways to make the space more flexible. It might mean, look, you know, if a high priority is to hold a dinner party once a week, you're going to have to make some choices about what do you keep, what do you make room for to be able to have a dinner party once a week. All these wonderful choices that we get to help our clients make. And that's the joy of it, isn't it? Okay, so that was step number one. And the first code word is living. Your home is living space. Write that down and keep it handy. Step number two is about multi-purpose and multi-owner. You'll see what I mean in a moment. So in case you don't know, my personal downsizing story is at just over 5 years ago, my husband and I downsized from the typical four-bedroom plus study plus garage plus two storage sheds in the garden, family home in the suburbs, to an inner-city two-bedroom apartment. Now, we made lots of choices and changes in that, and of course it was our choice to do this. We were looking forward to it. And that brought lots of decisions. Now, some of the decisions that we made were, for instance, I got to hang on to most of my craft supplies, most of my cookie cutters, and, you know, lots of other things that I hung on to, which other people perhaps may have made different choices. My husband's choice was he didn't want to let go of the vinyl LP collection. So even though I didn't see a need for it, of course, we have to respect each other's wishes. And so, you know, these are the things that you decide on when you're making these big life changes. One of the other things that we hung on to is an old antique gramophone, which was a gift from a family member. Now, the gramophone still plays music and it still looks quite nice, but you know, it really needs to have another purpose as well as those things. And it's lucky that it does actually do another purpose. It stores our wine collection. So in the cabinet, we, you know, you wouldn't know from looking at the outside, but there's room in there for us to store the wine. Now, that's a great example of multi-purpose. That isn't boring. It's not just, you know, we've got to have a very functional cupboard that has all the right shelves and storage and all that sort of stuff. It's actually something that looks beautiful, means something to us personally, but it does an extra job as well. So have a look with your clients about what would be multi-purpose for them. You know, some examples of good multi-purpose things are sofa beds, because they create an extra guest room. And can often also house the extra guest linen as well. Coffee tables with drawers in them or shelves underneath so that you can tuck away books and magazines. Shelves as room dividers are really quite useful, and they're flexible as well because they can be moved in and put to use in different ways. So whatever you're going to be using, and especially if you're introducing new furniture, into a home, you need to think about what sort of duties is it going to perform? Is it going to be more than a single-use item? And, of course, when you're living in a small space, it's more important than ever to have a place for everything because, you know, things can quickly get out of hand if you're living in a small space. If you don't put things away into their space, into their place, it can get quite messy. The good news is it doesn't take long to tidy up because it's a small home and it's easier to clean and tidy much, much, much. One thing I love to say to people about multitasking is that for maximum efficiency and productivity, people should not multitask, but furniture should. So if you keep that in mind, that any furniture really needs to multitask. And I mentioned multi-owner as another option here with step two. And that is really about the idea that you don't need to own everything to use something. So, for instance, a lawnmower, a leaf blower, a big punch bowl. You don't need to own these things to have regular use of them. And in fact, there's a growing trend now to not even own a car and instead to use things like GreenShare, FlexiCar and GoGet as options so that you don't even have to house the car. So if you think along those lines, there are lots of companies that will help with that, with renting things on a short-term basis. But there's also friends and family that you could do deals with and encourage your clients, of course, to do deals with about what do they actually need to own. Just because you use something a couple of times a year doesn't mean it's worth owning it. So there you go. Have a think about what could you suggest that they share or rent on a short-term basis. Alrighty, now we're up to step number three, which is to use the available space well. And of course, available space depends obviously on what you're dealing with. A dorm room is going to have a lot less available space than a bigger apartment and so on. But in general, there are principles that you can use. And one is to use the full height of the space. Naturally, things that the client uses on a regular basis, you want to have them in easiest reach. But there are lots and lots of things that they don't use often, I'm sure, that can be put up to use the full height of the space. And that may mean that you need to install things like cupboards and shelves and hooks and so on. I've seen some fabulous displays of things like hats on a wall, just lots and lots of hats on hooks on a wall. And it looks like an art installation where really it's just, you know, useful storage of somebody's hat collection. And, of course, there are, you know, shelves and cupboards. Naturally, you're going to need some management of all of that. And we'll talk a bit more about how to access all that later. But think about using the full height and as well the roof space. If you're lucky enough to have roof space, look at investing in getting it lined, maybe get a ladder put in so that you can actually get safe access to it and those sorts of things. Make sure it's damp proof, heat proof. Be careful about what you put up there. And if you do put something up there, here's a tip. Write it down somewhere. Have a list of what's up there so that your client doesn't need to go up into the roof space to look for something if it's, you know, it may not even be there. So that is one way to use the available space well. And then there's the other hidden storage. Hidden storage like under beds, under other furniture, anything that has even 7 centimetres clearance can be put to use. And I know that because I've measured my in tray, and I'm sure you could get some in trays that are even shorter than seven centimetres. An in tray can hold a craft project, children's art supplies, you know, all kinds of things. Maybe if you're planning a trip overseas, it might hold all the paperwork. And if you can have an in tray that slides right under your couch and it's out of the way, but also really accessible. That's a trick I've learned from my daughter, who put her daughter's, you know, colouring books and pencils and so on in under their couch. And it's, you know, very little clearance. So there's hidden storage opportunities around. The backs of doors are very useful. I have on the back of my bedroom door, I hang beads and long necklaces and so on. And there's, of course, the shoe pockets and shoe racks that go on the back of doors really neatly. And, of course, they don't just have to hold shoes. They can hold cleaning supplies, spices for, you know, in the kitchen. They can hold, you know, children's toys, shoe cleaning, pet walking supplies, all kinds of things. And almost every room in the house could have one of those things and be put to use really well, get that the back of the doors used well. Now, there's other hidden storage, and it might be outside. The client might have some outside space that they have access to, or even a storage shed in their garage or something like that. And it's amazing how some sheds can be really very compact but very useful. And there's lots of different options. So things like bike storage, you know, just gardening tool storage, or even something more more important like tax records and things can go into an outdoor shed as long as, again, it's damp-proof and so on. So think outside the box, outside the home as well when you're looking for hidden storage options. So that's the end of step three, and our second code word is clever. Look for clever storage options. When I send out the recording of this this class, I'm going to send you a link to a Pinterest board with lots of clever storage options, and you know there are so many more than that. Okay, step number four, appropriate storage. So you've talked about using the space well, but now we're going to talk about appropriate storage. And if space is really tight, then you've got to really think about not only the space that you're creating or making, but what you're storing. And that's why one of the tricks I love to use is nesting. Nesting is when you have items that fit neatly into each other. So in practical terms, instead of having 3 stacks of salad bowls, you would have 1 stack of salad bowl because they would all fit neatly inside each other. And of course, immediately that's created more space in the cupboard, in the kitchen. And I can highly recommend nesting. I can also highly recommend ditching anything that is a novelty shape, for instance, a Christmas tree-shaped platter that just isn't going to stack neatly with square or round platters. And that makes me think of my own cupboard, which has 2 stacks of platters, one all the round ones and one all the square ones, and that takes up very little space, and I get to have quite a lot of of the platters. And in fact, I should out myself and explain that when I moved here, I got to keep 3 dinner sets. And that's not something I would say to a client, oh, yeah, sure, bring all your dinner sets. But, you know, they were, one dinner set was an heirloom one from my mother and her mother and her mother. Another one was the one that I got for my 21st. And then there's the one that we use on an everyday basis. So when I said use the good china, of course there is an exception to every rule. I'm really happy with my personal level of what I've kept. And I get to live in a city at still keeping these things that mean a good deal to me. And that's probably where we want our clients to be too. Not that they feel deprived, not that they feel like they're missing out on living an abundant life, but that they've made good decisions about the things that they've brought with them into this space, and they are, you know, just happy to be living that full life and not feeling like they've left anything behind. Okay, so more on appropriate stories. I've talked about nesting. Now I'm going to talk about drawers. Now, typically, everyone knows now the best way to you know, build a kitchen is to install drawers so that you get to the back of cupboards and so on. Well, I like to create drawers in a lot of areas. And you don't have to spend a lot of money to have drawers built in some cases. You can make drawers by using plastic tubs. On a shelf, that becomes a drawer. A wicker basket, that can become a drawer. It means that you can pull the drawer out off the shelf, be able to see what you've got in there, be able to reach in and grab everything right to the back of the shelf instead of rummaging, things spilling, etc. And in the wardrobe, you can make a big difference for your clients by a couple of really simple things. One is to use multi-trouser hangers. I use those for trousers as well as for scarves. And, you know, depending on what people need, you could use them for all sorts of things. But they are a really useful way to save space in a wardrobe, but also give people access to their things. What we don't want to do is cram someone's wardrobe so much that everything's getting creased, it's hard to get things out, etc. The other tip for the wardrobe is to get rid of empty hangers. Now, I know everyone's got some empty hangers because some things are in the wash or haven't been hung up yet, but I'm talking about the excess hangers. It isn't unusual when I'm working with a client to get rid of up to, you know, 30 hangers, and they're usually the horrible wire ones. But even that, if you can imagine, if you stack them all up together, that you could save a good half a metre of space. So if you took out every single empty hanger and just got rid of it, you would create an extra half a metre of space in the wardrobe. Now imagine that if you said to your client, I know instantly how I can give you an extra half metre. Well, you know, real estate is very valuable, and especially in a woman's wardrobe. So then we have other things like shoeboxes. Now, shoeboxes take up space, but they're very useful because it means you can stack pairs of shoes, and especially if they're out of season shoes or special occasion shoes, you can get them up out of the way or at the back of the cupboard or somewhere that's easy to get access but not underfoot, and make it, when you remove the things that are not necessary every day, you make more space available for the things that you do want access to every day. And finally, appropriate storage might mean inserting extra shelves typically when a builder creates a kitchen pantry or a wardrobe, they're not thinking about maximising the storage. They're thinking about what's the least number of shelves I can get away with, because every shelf costs me money. So if that's the case, if you need extra shelves, go ahead and insert them. Either have them installed properly, or just use, you can get little inserts that will be really useful and very flexible, so they can be reused in different ways in the future, so that you are using all the space that's available. And I'm sure you're very clever. You can figure out what your client needs as far as extra shelves goes. So then we have step number 5, and that is all about easy access and flexibility. Right at the start, I talked about how you want each room to be multifunctional and have some flexibility to how it can be used. And one really good way to make that happen is to make the furniture in the room movable easily. Now, that might mean having it on wheels. I've seen some wonderful kitchen benches that are actually on wheels. So just imagine the flexibility. If you could pick up your kitchen bench and swing it around 90 degrees, push it up against a different wall, create a different space, how functional, how useful that could be to creating a whole new room virtually. So think about how you're going to make this stuff easily accessed and flexible for your clients. Now, the accessible, if something is on wheels, you can then put it in front of other things, and then even though, in normal circumstances it's not ideal to have to move a piece of furniture to get to something behind, but if it's on wheels and that was your only storage option, it really makes it a lot more useful. You can do it quite easily. So have a think about, if you're stuck for ideas, think about, would a pair of wheels make this more easily, more easy for your clients? Drawers, again, go for drawers wherever you can. Install them. There are some great companies around that will do retro installation of drawers. You don't have to have a complete kitchen remodel to have drawers installed. So have a look at some of those options. Ladders. Of course, if we're going to use the full height of the space, we're going to have to get access to it, and safe access. And it's not just us with our able bodies climbing up. It's going to be our clients who might not have such able bodies. So we want the ladder to be light, sturdy. We want it to be stored somewhere useful, so think about where that ladder is going to be stored so that it is easy and to access and is easy to get in and out of that space so that you can get up and down. And naturally, you're not going to put things that you need all the time up in the very highest spot. Pulley wheels. Now, this is a bit way out, but you might think about using a pulley system to bring a shelf down high from on high, or even, I've seen bicycles stored up high. When you, come home from your ride, you want to put your bike somewhere, you can get it up off the ground by pulley. That is, let me read my notes. Oh, yes. The other thing I wanted to say was we want to make sure everything's in good working order. If you've got drawers that stick, a cupboard where the hinge doesn't quite work properly, that is going to inhibit its use. People are not going to volunteer to put things away and to use that cupboard or drawer because it's just too hard. It's human nature. We're not going to use it. So our job can be to make sure everything is in good working order. Maybe it needs some repair work, and maybe if you're handy, you can do it. Otherwise, you could get somebody else in to do it as well. So think about easy access and flexibility. And now, time for some do's and don'ts. First, don't resort to off-site storage unless you absolutely don't have any choice. The one thing I know about clients is they say, oh, I'll put it into storage and I'll deal with it later. Well, we know that later never comes. Usually it's forgotten about and it's incurring a monthly fee. It's making them feel bad. It might tempt them to put more things into storage. So if extra storage is really necessary, I would say you're better off putting it on site. Get a shed into their patio area or into their garage area if that's what you have to do. But really try not to go to the off-site storage option. Don't think that the client never has to declutter again. There's one thing we know is, people buy more things, you acquire things, you get another season's worth of clothes, Christmas rolls around or a birthday and people give you gifts. So this is not a set and forget thing. The thing with small spaces is they can become cluttered more quickly because there's fewer places that you can stash things away, hide and ignore. So this might, be an opportunity for you to train your client about the process of, thinking when you're out shopping, do I really need the extra pasta? Because, is there room in the pantry for it? Do I really need the extra winter coat? Is there room in my cupboard for it? And if I do want the extra winter coat, I have to make some choices then about what's coming out. Or, what are the other options? So helping a client with a small space, you might want to put in an annual reminder for them. There's maybe a tweaking that comes along, but an opportunity for you to work with them on a semi-regular basis like that. And the do's. Do be realistic about what you and your client can achieve in the space. I know from my experience, I can no longer host large parties at my house, and that's fine. We use a local venue instead, or we host smaller dinner parties, or we go out to a neutral venue for a larger dinner. You've got to be realistic about what you can achieve, and therefore, because I don't host 50 people at a party, I don't need 50 glasses. I don't need, lots and lots of chairs. So these are the consequences of the choices that you make. It can be very freeing, but it can also be quite confronting for the person who maybe isn't used to thinking like that. I'm reminded of the lady who was very used to having lots and lots of different sets of dinner sets. I've kept three, but she wanted to keep it almost all of her, at least 10 different dinner sets. And she kept saying, I'm going to have so many dinner parties when I downsize. And it became a bit of a joke. And she soon realised that it just wasn't possible to have everything. So do set up routines that help manage the small space often. So, help your client to see that maybe on a weekly basis they need to empty the filing tray instead of waiting longer for it to build up and so on. Do invest in the right bones, the right structure. It's worth getting it right and not making do with what happens to be there. Because, as I say, you want people to live well in their homes. You want them to live large in their small space and not just put up with what they've been given. investing in the right equipment in the first place is really worth it. Do get them to think before bringing something new or something else extra into the space. Oh, do encourage them to use the cloud for document storage, because the one thing you don't want to be storing in your living space is piles and piles of paper. So, you know, help them to set up with different options for their documents. Do make appropriate choices for the client. As I said, I have kept my dinner sets, cookie cutter collection, craft supplies, and my husband kept his vinyl records. That was really appropriate for us. Of course, we're more used to making those choices than perhaps our clients are. So it's up to us to help them see what is meaningful, what's useful for them. And that brings me to the third code word, which is full. Help our clients to live a full life in a small space. And now I'm going to invite you to unmute yourselves and ask away any questions that you have. Has anyone got a question?
Not so much a question, that was really great to get practical advice.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And when I'm working with small spaces, I like to use, usually it's in the kitchen, but I like to use things that, my brain just went blank what the name of them are, things that squash down and then, my brain's just gone but blank.
Collapsible?
Thank you.
Is that it? Collapsible items rather than...
Like a collapsible colander or something.
Oh, yes. Great idea.
And I was working with a client and they had a tiny kitchen and we were talking about caravans and I said, and boats. And I was saying, really, you should be using the same ideas as a caravan or a boat because, same ideas, really.
Yes, exactly. Still a small space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good idea. Yeah.
Collapsible colanders, best invention ever.
and you can get, the equivalent of Tupperware containers that squash down and as well.
You can get almost everything now.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing, actually. Lunch boxes, drink bottles, salad bowls,
wow. You
name it.
That's good.
I've even got measuring cups and spoons that are all collapsible. So,
Yeah. Great. There you go.
Just another tip.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else got a question or a comment? No? Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining me on the call, whether you're listening live or on the recording. Your code words are ready to roll. When they're ready to roll, send them along to me at angela@creatingorder.com.au and I'll send you your certificate that you can use for APO accreditation. Now, next teleclass. I'm so excited. It's actually not a teleclass. That's one of the exciting things. It's a webinar.
Ooh.
And when you hear the topic, you'll realise why it's a webinar. It's going to be a very visual class. And it's going to be guest presented as well by Jodie Galvin from Picture This Photo Organising. And she's going to give you an introduction to photo organising. You'll learn the basics about, how to work with a client and what she does in her photo organising business. And that is April the 26th. You will receive all the details about how to log in and all of that. But I'm excited that this is a webinar that with a difference and... I've seen Jodie present this already and really enjoyed it and learned a lot myself. So, yeah, look out for that.
That'll be great.
Yeah. So thank you very much again and until next time, cheers.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks, Angela.